Hello and welcome to our Krauscast webinar series. My name is Elisa Lamel and I'm the legal content specialist here at Kraus Financial Services. Today's topic is Mastering Non-Compliant Annuities and Medicaid Planning, hosted by our Vice President of Sales and Marketing, Thomas Kraus. Before we get started, we do have a few housekeeping items. If you have any questions during today's webinar, please feel free to type those in the questions section of the GoToWebinar toolbar so we can answer them at the end of the presentation. Additionally, a copy of today's PowerPoint can be found in the handout section of the GoToWebinar toolbar. We also ask that you please take a moment to complete the post-webinar survey that will pop up on your screens after the presentation, as we truly do appreciate that feedback. And now let's get to today's presentation. Tom, I'll turn it over to you.
Well, thank you, Elisa, and I hope everyone's enjoying their summer thus far. I know we're kind of in the dog days of summer at this point, so hopefully everyone's had a chance to enjoy the good weather and whatnot wherever you are joining us from. So just a little bit about us here at Kraus Financial Services before we jump into the presentation. A lot of you likely know us for our Medicaid compliant annuity. That's been our flagship product for about 30 years. We developed some of the first Medicaid compliant annuities that were used by attorneys across the country to help accelerate their clients' eligibility for the Medicaid program. So that's kind of our bread and butter. Been in this for a number of years. We've got a pretty big team here really designed to help you in that throughout that process. We've also added some additional product offerings to really get fully encompass that asset protection planning. And one of those products that we really lean on is the long-term care insurance. So we just added, we actually purchased a wholesale operation. So we have some specialists in-house now who can assist you and your clients in the pre-planning stage to really hopefully prevent some of the need to maybe do some crisis planning later on. So it's a great tool, it's a great opportunity if you are working with younger clients looking to do some of that pre-planning to give us a call, we can help walk you through that. But what we really do is we're not just a product provider, we like to educate in this space. We really like to be a leader, a thought leader in terms of, you know, giving you the tools and the resources you need to really do this practice out in your community and get great results for your clients. So that's what we're here to do, and hopefully we can give you some value in today's presentation. Some of the goals of the presentation, we like to do this about once a year. It's really to talk about how do you deal with clients who come into your office, they're in the spend down process, they might have assets that are not just cash assets that you might be unfamiliar with, especially as it relates to annuities, because that's something that attorneys, we as attorneys are not really trained to identify and truly understand. And, you know, with so many different annuity companies out there, insurance companies issuing annuities, it's really hard to know what you're working with. So what I want to do today is really take a look at the landscape of, you know, what are these annuity products out there? What are you likely to encounter in your practice when you're working with clients? We'll talk a little bit about a Medicaid annuity and distinguish it from an annuity out there for retirement planning or things of that nature. And then we'll identify the annuities that are not compliant with the Medicaid regulations. So these are the annuities that will cause eligibility issues if your client were to hold on to them before applying. So we'll talk about some of those situations. And then finally, we're going to review kind of some real life case examples and illustrate how this process works, how do we handle a non-compliant annuity, what can be done with it to get it into a form that we can then, you know, do our proper spend out. So that's kind of the goals of today's presentation. We're going to cover quite a bit of material, but again, you know, we've done this presentation a couple times over the last handful of years, so hopefully it's review for some of you. So just setting the stage, talking about the popularity of annuities in the U.S., annuities have exploded, at least in recent years, in popularity. This is due to the interest rate environment shifting from a near zero rate for about, you know, 10 plus years. Now we're in an interest rate environment where, you know, the federal fund rate is at 5.5%. So it's a for a lot of people who have seen annuity rates depressed over the last 10 years, now over the last couple of years, to try to get in front of inflation, the federal funds rate has risen pretty dramatically. So the annuity rates have gone up. We're looking at some 7-year annuities out there paying about 5.9%. So pretty good. It's a pretty good safe haven, especially for senior clients who really want to avoid some of that market volatility. You know, the S&P 500, for example, in 2022 was down right around 20%. And now this year it's up about 18%. So pretty big swings, you know, but over 30% swing over a 1 year period. And as our clients get older, they get maybe past that retirement phase where they're now kind of in those post-retirement years where they're not traveling as much. They're maybe more housebound. Maybe the concerns start to change, looking at long-term care as an issue. A lot of times they'll end up in these products because they want to avoid that market volatility. So many seniors are going to own these products. You're going to see more seniors coming to your office and they're going to have these products as part of their asset base. So we really need to take a look at, you know, what are these annuities that they're going to walk into your office with and what can be done with them. So why is it problematic that you're going to, you know, encounter these contracts when people come to your office? Because it's how Medicaid is going to treat these annuity contracts. An existing annuity may be treated as either typically a countable asset, which must be spent down if it's above the limitations, or it's going to be considered a divestment for Medicaid purposes. Again, countable asset, we have to spend those down before qualifying, and that's going to be $2,000 for an individual and a separate number of the community spouse resource allowance, whatever that figure is in your state, for a couple. And the other way it could be treated potentially is a divestment. And that's where, you know, when the contract was annuitized, there could be a penalty period associated with that annuitization. And there's a number of ways states could kind of approach that. But the bottom line here is if your client owns an existing annuity, it will likely prevent or delay their eligibility for benefits and cost them thousands of dollars in nursing home bills if we don't figure out a way to work with it and do something with it to then, you know, go through the process of the allowable spend outs. So first I want to really distinguish what is a Medicaid compliant annuity. This really allows us to distinguish it from the annuities that you're likely to encounter in your office. So what is a Medicaid compliant annuity? And it's a Medicaid compliant annuity is a single premium immediate annuity or SPIA that really meets the requirements of the Medicaid program, which today we're operating under the Deficit Reduction Act of 2005. So it meets all of the criteria for the annuity to basically convert an asset base into an income stream and has zero cash value. So the Medicaid compliant annuity is basically Xing out or eliminating the assets and turning it into just an income stream. So in the context of Medicaid planning, it converts countable assets into income, allowing the individual to qualify for benefits and accelerate their eligibility for the Medicaid program. A question that we commonly get is, well, what if my client already owns a Medicaid compliant annuity? Well, in short, the answer is they probably don't. There's very few companies that actually offer a true Medicaid compliant annuity. And in all cases, the annuity is never going to be sold as a pre-planning product. It's not going to be sold, to meet income needs or investment objectives. That's not the situation that a Medicaid compliant annuity is going to be sold in. So it's very highly unlikely that your client's going to own a contract that meets all the requirements, which we'll talk about, or that can be made to meet the requirements. That's another thing that we look at when we're doing an analysis of a pre-existing annuity. Is it currently Medicaid compliant? If no, can it be made Medicaid compliant by making some adjustments to the contract? But in most situations, because the structure, it wasn't being considered for Medicaid qualification purposes, either at the time or in the future, it's not going to be able to be made Medicaid compliant either. Very, very rarely have I ever encountered that. But yeah, in most cases, that's not going to be the case. So we talk about a Medicaid compliant annuity. There's five key requirements, and these are all tests, and they have to be met independently. If we fail any one of these tests or requirements, the annuity is not going to be able to be used as a spend down tool. It's going to be either treated as an asset or a divestment. So the first requirement is that the contract has to be irrevocable. And most contracts that are purchased out there are irrevocable to the payment amount and the duration of payments. However, for the annuity to be meet the Medicaid requirements, it also has to be irrevocable as to the parties related to the contract. So the owner is going to be irrevocable in a Medicaid plan annuity, the payee is going to be irrevocable, the beneficiaries associated with the contract will also be irrevocable. In a typical annuity, you can usually change all those parties just with a simple request to the insurance company. So it would usually fail this test. In most cases, this test is always going to be the one that's going to trigger the contract to not be allowed to be used as a Medicaid compliant product. Next, the contract has to be non-assignable. There's a big secondary market for annuitized contracts, the J.G. Wentworth, Peachtree Financials of the world. They're out there and they want to buy these streams of income from these people who own them in exchange for a lump sum of cash. And again, because I can put J.G. Wentworth into the shoes of the owner, I can put them in the shoes of the beneficiary, then that protects their interest. So then they're willing to exchange that block of cash for that guaranteed income stream. But for an annuity to work with the Medicaid program, it has to have specific language in it that prevents any value related to that contract to going to a third party. So we can't assign the payment, we can't redirect the payment, we can't redirect the beneficiaries, we can't make any changes, and the contract has very specific language that outlines that. So the companies like J.G. Wentworth cannot purchase a Medicaid compliant product on the secondary market. There's no value and there's no ability for them to maneuver in to receive benefit. And trust me, they've tried over the years. We had many battles with them over the years where they claimed that they could purchase them, but they actually couldn't given the contract language. Next, the contract has to be actuarially sound. This means that the term of the annuity must be equal to or less than the owner's Medicaid life expectancy. And this is generally based on the age and gender Social Security actuarially tables. So that's going to determine the maximum length that we can structure the annuity for and still have it be Medicaid compliant. You can always go with a term shorter than, just we cannot go longer than. What we see a lot of times out there, a big concern of retirees is they do not want to outlive their income. So they'll structure a contract with a guaranteed period, maybe a 10-year period certain, but then they'll have a lifetime income rider. And that means that they have a guaranteed 10-year payout, but if they're living beyond the 10 years, they'll continue to receive whatever payments outlined by the contract. And this, again, is going to fail the actuarially sound test and create an issue for Medicaid purposes. Equal payments. Generally, our contracts, Medicaid compliant annuity contracts, are going to provide an equal monthly payment. There's going to be no deferral. So the tax deferred annuity would be an issue. No balloon payments. A lot of times we'll see contracts that are purchased for, like, again, retirement purposes or income purposes, where we'll have a cost of living adjustment where the payment will be different. As it moves throughout the years, there'll be an inflation rider or something of the sort. Again, if we have a contract that has that feature, it's not going to work with the Medicaid program. It's going to create issues. And then finally, for an annuity to work with the Medicaid program, we have to name the state as beneficiary. And typically, it's going to be the primary beneficiary to the extent of benefits paid on behalf of the institutionalized or Medicaid recipient. Most cases, we're not going to, somebody setting this up for retirement purposes is not going to name the state as beneficiary. It just wouldn't make any sense. So these are the requirements. They all have to be there for the contract to be considered Medicaid compliant. If we fail any of these, then we have to consider our options. So what if my client's annuity is non-compliant? If your client owns a non-compliant annuity, they typically have three options to eliminate the contract. And that's going to really depend on the type of annuity. It's going to be either they can surrender it back to the insurance company and receive some cash. They can exchange it for a different type of annuity, particularly a Medicaid compliant annuity, or they can sell it on the secondary market. And this, we'll talk more about when each of these options comes into play. But these are the three primary options that we have when we're dealing with a non-compliant annuity, which is going to be 99.9% of the annuities that you encounter in your office. So there's really two types of structures of annuities that we're going to see. There's going to be a tax-deferred annuity and an immediate annuity, and the options related to what we can do with either of these is different. So we really want to know what type of annuity that we're dealing with, because that's going to narrow down what our options are. So the first is a tax-deferred annuity. Tax-deferred annuity is a contract that it's going to sit with its block of cash that's going to sit with the insurance company that's going to accumulate growth on a tax-deferred basis until it's annuitized or until we cash it out in some form. It can be funded multiple ways, either a single premium or maybe multiple payments. With a tax-deferred annuity, the owner typically has access to the cash value of the contract and can generally make withdrawals at any time. So if you understand the Medicaid qualification rules, because it's an easily accessible cash value, that's going to be treated as a countable asset. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the coming slides. But the types of TDAs that you're likely to include are going to be a traditional fixed, a MIGA, fixed index, variable, and all of these different types of annuities really just speak to the chassis that the contract is kind of the underwriting investment vehicle that the contract is kind of lumped together with. So like the variable or fixed index, you know, could have some equity exposure. The MIGA is going to be a multi-year guarantee from the insurance company. So again, these are contracts that are going to sit with the insurance company, block of cash, and they're going to accumulate value based on whatever investment chassis that they're attached to, and it's going to accumulate value in a tax deferred manner. So tax deferred annuities and Medicaid, I mentioned this on the previous slide, but because a tax deferred annuity has accessible cash value, it's going to be considered a countable resource for Medicaid purposes and must likely be spent down like you would any other asset, like, you know, bank accounts, things of that nature. There might be some exceptions depending on your state, depending on what the rules are related to IRAs. There's different rules in some states if the community spouse owns the IRA or the institutionalized spouse, but there might be some opportunity to protect the IRA if it's in a TDA. So getting into the options when we're dealing with a TDA, can a TDA, there's the three options. You can surrender it, exchange it, or sell it. So can a TDA be surrendered? The answer is yes. The owner can surrender a tax-deferred annuity by making a request to the insurance company, and then they will receive a cash settlement in return. One thing to note here, depending on how long ago that this annuity was put into place, because typically there's an insurance agent that sold the product, there's gonna be some fees that the insurance companies kind of had to endure. So there would likely be a surrender charge that could be related to that request to surrender the contract. And, you know, the surrender charge can be anywhere from 1% to 15% given based on how long ago the contract was put into place. Another consideration when we're dealing with a tax deferred annuity and we're surrendering the contract is if we do surrender the contract, any interest that was gained over the time frame would then be taxable at that point. So that would be something we would want to really take into account when we're making the determination if we should surrender it. So once liquidated, the cash can be used then to purchase or improve exempt assets during the spend down process or utilize like a Medicaid compliant annuity opportunity or of sorts. So this option is, we're going to use this most likely when we have smaller value annuities where the tax implications won't be that large. But if we do have a large tax burden, because if this contract was set up a long time ago, we might want to look at another option. It might not be the best option because we could cause their taxable income to rise and subject their Social Security potentially to additional taxes as well. So we want to be really careful and really analyze, you know, given how long this contract's been in place, what is the amount that's been added as part of the interest. So looking at that as a whole. So the next option is, can we exchange a tax-deferred annuity? And the answer is yes. Your client can transfer a tax-deferred annuity into a Medicaid-compliant annuity via a 1035 tax-free exchange. And this allows us to take that tax-deferred annuity that might have some interest or some gains, and we can then transition it directly to an MCA, which is not a taxable event. And then we can stretch out the payments to maybe spread out that tax burden over a number of years so we don't, again, subject maybe the Social Security to tax and other considerations. The new Medicaid compliant annuity carrier will obtain the funds directly from the current carrier. One thing to note here though is the transfer does not negate any surrender charges related to the contract. So if we are still subject to that surrender period, those still will be a consideration when we're doing a 1035 exchange. But again, you're weighing out all the options. Medicaid qualification is typically going to be take higher precedent because of those the dollars each month that your clients have to spend on their care is usually going to be more than what the hit would be from a transfer penalty or a surrender charge, excuse me. This option is going to be more ideal for those higher value annuities or the annuities that maybe have been established longer that have more interest. So we want to maybe look to extend out that taxable period so we don't get it all bunched up in 1 year. Structuring a Medicaid compliant annuity with a tax deferred annuity. When a non-qualified tax deferred annuity is funded into an MCA, the transaction is not a taxable event. I mentioned this in the previous slide. Again, the original policy is going to be prorated over the term of the new MCA. And again, once the payments from the MCA are dispersed, the gain associated with each payment is taxable to the owner. So again, we're going to only use this when we have a longer multi-year annuity term. So we want to really stretch out that taxable burden over a period of years versus in that 1 year. And what if a tax-deferred annuity is also an IRA? Because IRAs are considered a countable asset in most states, a qualified tax-deferred annuity will also be countable in those states. Clients can do a transfer to an MCA through a trustee-to-trustee transfer, a 60-day rollover. And then since the entire contract is funded with pre-tax dollars, each payment from the MCA will be taxable to the owner. So when we do this, every payment is going to be treated as fully taxable in that given year. So now that we've discussed tax deferred annuities, now we're moving into immediate annuities. This is the second type of annuity that you're most likely going to run into. An immediate annuity is a contract funded with either a lump sum or maybe it was a tax deferred annuity previously that has now been annuitized and it's making regular payments. So to determine whether it's immediate annuity, we're looking for that payment stream. We're looking for the page from the insurance company that states, you know, when the payments began, how long the payments are for, you know, what the payment amount is. That's what we're looking for to determine whether or not it's been annuitized or it's an immediate annuity. So immediate annuities and Medicaid, a little less flexible to plan with. For the tax deferred annuity, we had those first two options, surrendering or exchanging it, were very viable options. For immediate annuities, we don't have as many, outlets to kind of deal with it. But for Medicaid purposes, an immediate annuity may be viewed as income, a divestment, or an asset. It really depends on what the contract language states. If it meets the requirements of an MCA outlined previously, again, it should only be treated as income. But most of the time, you're not going to have a client who walks in your office with a contract that meets all those requirements, so that's not really a huge consideration. More likely, you're going to deal with these two scenarios, with the second one being the most common. If an immediate annuity is irrevocable and non-assignable, the premium amount will be treated as a divestment potentially. This means that the owner might incur a penalty period of ineligibility because of that divestment. But again, this is pretty rare. We don't see too many of these contracts that are irrevocable or non-assignable, but then, you know, don't meet the other requirements. So this is a pretty rare scenario. More commonly, and this is what we encounter the vast majority of the time, immediate annuities are going to be revocable. We can change the parties to the contract. We can change who gets the payment. And we can assign value of that contract to a third party. These contracts are going to be considered to have value because the Medicaid offices, you know that there's companies out there like JG Wentworth and whatnot that will purchase these contracts. They know that there's an underlying value to that income stream. So they understand that pretty well. And they've seen enough of these contracts to know that there's an underlying value to them. So therefore, it's going to be treated as an asset because it's going to be revocable and assignable. So what can be done with an immediate annuity? Can we surrender it? No, we cannot surrender it because once it's been annuitized, all that the owner is going to be entitled to in most cases is going to be that stream of income. Once we make that annuitization election, we cannot make any changes to that stream. That's going to be the one thing usually that's going to be totally irrevocable once we make that election. Can we surrender an immediate annuity? No, again, an immediate annuity does not qualify to be transferred. All that the owner is going to be entitled to is going to be that stream of income. We cannot go back to cash and then transfer it under a 1035 tax-free exchange. So in most cases, both of these are going to be foreclosed on. These are the two options we can't really do anything with an immediate annuity. So the question is, what can be done? Well, if your client's annuity has value in the secondary market, it can be sold for cash. Again, there is a big market out there for these contracts, and there's companies that want to step into the shoes of the owner, of the beneficiary, to receive the residual value in the contract. So what would happen is we'd take the contract out to the secondary market, and it would be purchased, and again, a block of cash in exchange for those future payments. There could be the option to sell the contract intra-family, and this is usually going to be the best option, and we'll talk about how these secondary market companies value the contracts, but they're going to get a rate of return on that, sending that block of cash over. And if you do have a family member, you know, you have the right family dynamics where somebody could step into the shoes and bid, you know, whatever that highest amount is, these are pretty good investments because they have a guaranteed rate of return. So family members could take advantage of that investment opportunity versus, you know, sending it to a third party. But again, most cases we don't see this really happening because of the family dynamics, of the timing issues. There's a lot of things that are happening during that Medicaid spend down process that just don't really, you know, make this a good transition to a family member unless you have, you know, the right situation. So selling an immediate annuity, now that we know that that's the only option we really have when we're dealing with a non-compliant immediate annuity, what does that actually look like or what does that mean? Again, annuities are going to be based on the life of the original annuitant. Therefore, it's always going to be tied in some manner to that original annuitant, whether they're the triggering life at death, which would, you know, trigger the beneficiary options or designation that would then step in. But they'll always be tied to it in some manner. But what it really involves is we're going to change the primary beneficiary of the policy because usually there's going to be a guaranteed period remaining in the contract that, you know, the beneficiary would be entitled to if that individual were to pass predeceased the term. And then we're also going to change the owner and or payee of the contract, or in some cases, some insurance companies require, and they don't have the ability to change the owner, but they have the ability to do an absolute assignment of the remaining contract payments. So again, to simplify this, we're just going to sell to a third party who's going to step into the shoes of the person receiving the payments. And then also they're going to step into the shoes of the primary beneficiary to receive any residual benefit in the contract if the individual predeceases the guaranteed portion of what's remaining. So some contract provisions that we have to kind of look for when we're analyzing these contracts. If we're looking at an immediate annuity contract, there's going to be some contract provisions that we're looking for, and they're not all going to be the same. They're going to kind of, you know, be worded differently. So sometimes it might appear that it's there or not there, but it's really looking at the contract as a whole to determine, you know, are these options available or what options are available. So first, when we do an analysis of the contract, we're always going to look to see whether or not there's language that clearly states that the contract, we can make changes to the owner, we can make changes to the beneficiary, we can redirect or assign the payment. And usually the contracts will state that very clearly and state the process for, you know, achieving whatever we're looking to do, like the ownership change, the beneficiary change, et cetera. Also, this one's probably, you know, more important. We're looking for that specific term or a specific guaranteed term that's remaining in the contract. So that's what a company's really going to bid on, because there's going to be, you know, the original payment, number of payments that the individual purchased, and whatever's remaining. So we're really looking at what's remaining. What's been paid out thus far is not really relevant to the analysis. It's what does that remaining guaranteed term look like? If there is a life term, usually that's not going to really receive any analysis or any value, because a lot of times these clients are older. So there's no way, the companies do not consider that as part of the valuation. So again, it's going to hold very little or no value in most cases. And so if you do have a client who's just in the life portion of the contract, usually it's going to not be worth anything on the secondary market because of the advanced age, and the companies can't really push out a block of cash because the person could die tomorrow and there wouldn't be any residual benefit if the contract's in that life term. But again, something we're looking for. And then finally, we're going to look at the contract to see if it's funded with non-qualified monies. If it is funded with qualified monies, particularly IRA funds, a lot of the insurance carriers are restricting any opportunity to change ownership or redirect payment from a qualified contract. And I think a lot of it's due to the IRS regulations, but insurance companies themselves will not allow these to go through. I know I worked on one a number of years ago. It took forever. We did finally get it through after, you know, working through the legal department, but it was not worth the effort. We could have taken a different route and got a better result for the client. So definitely something to be aware of. If it's a qualified contract, there's other ways to work around it, but not try to sell it. It's usually not going to be a worthwhile effort given the context of Medicaid planning. So for when we're going to sell the contract, one thing that's very important is we want to establish the fair market value of the contract. And we do this to help ensure or to ensure that the contract is not going to be subject to a divestment penalty period where they state that the client didn't receive the fair value for the contract. And how we establish fair market value is we're going to bring the contract out, we're going to obtain multiple offers, and that's going to set what the fair market value is, and we're usually going to select the highest offer. And then the client, if they select that, they should not be subject to any divestment penalty. A lot of clients ask the question, well, if my client's not receiving back the full amount of what is remaining in the contract, couldn't the difference be subject to a divestment? And the answer is going to be no. We have not been challenged on that issue. I understand, where that argument could come into place, but once we get into the slides of how these contracts are analyzed, we'll talk a little bit more about that. It's clear that they are receiving fair market value for the contract. They're not selling it for less than because of some of the considerations when it comes to valuing a stream of income. And here we can talk a little bit more about that. So annuity valuations are going to be based on the financial concept of the time value of money, which basically states that a dollar today is going to be worth more than a dollar in the future. I think this concept is even more evident given the environment we've been in over the last handful of years. Inflation rates in 2021 hit 7%. So for over the course of that year, your dollar had 7% less spending power. In 2022 is 6.5%. We're finally getting it under wraps by raising interest rates. Now it's about 3% for 2023. But again, another way to illustrate this is the cost of a Big Mac in the 1990s was about $2.45. In 2023 now, we're at a $5.15. So, the value's the prices have gone significantly up, which just kind of illustrates that, your spending power of that dollar goes down as we go into time. So those payments in the future are worth less than the payments that are closer to today. So what we're really looking for is a present value. So this is the current worth of the amount to be received in the future. In the case of the annuity, it's gonna reflect the actual dollar amount of the remaining annuity payments. Because again, we're gonna assess a value for all those payments in the future. The ones farther out are gonna be worth less than the ones that are gonna happen more or sooner to the time of purchase. The discount rate, this is the rate of return that the secondary market company is going to receive in exchange for that block of cash. This is kind of how they evaluate these investments. And this is the amount your client can receive the contract on the secondary market. So this is going to be kind of what they receive as their investment rate. So they're looking at the discount rate to discount these future income flows. So how is the discount rate determined? There's a couple of factors here that come into play. The number of remaining payments. Again, those payments that are farther out in the future are gonna be discounted more heavily because inflation should kind of eat away at them over the years. The monthly payment amount. So if we have a higher monthly payment, they might be treated to a lesser discount rate, and the payout options available to the beneficiary. Some contracts allow the owner to, or the beneficiary to go back to cash less all the annuity payments that have been received. Pretty rare, we don't see too many of them. Usually at death, there's gonna be the ability to continue the contract payments as is, or the ability to receive a lump sum of money subject to a discount rate. So, but again, if there is a contract that does have that kind of ability to return to cash, it could receive a lower internal rate of return to that secondary market funding company. So question is, how can we help you with this process? Well, we've had a complimentary annuity valuation service because we do deal with so many of these different annuities and we're in the annuity space. We can analyze what your client's working with. We can tell you whether or not, is it Medicaid compliant? If not, can it be made Medicaid compliant? If no, how do we bring this contract out and get it sold in a very efficient manner? We did set up a sister company that does also purchase a large number of these contracts directly from clients. And we really did that because of the timing element when it comes to dealing with these contracts. We understand crisis Medicaid planning. A lot of our business flows the last week of the month because everyone's trying to get their cases in so we can get qualification for the following month. So we understand the timing element, whereas a lot of these secondary market companies that we have worked with, they were kind of going at their own pace or at the pace of the insurance company, and it was just too slow for our client base. So we put together an accelerated program that allows us to really work through this very quickly and get your client the cash as fast as possible that really coincides with that Medicaid spend down timeline. So then your client can then achieve eligibility much sooner. So how does our process work? Well, once you have a client who has a contract, maybe you're not sure what you're looking at, send it to our office. We'll do an assessment of the contract. We'll tell you what your options are given, we'll analyze what kind of contract it is and then what we can do with it. If it is deemed to be an immediate annuity that is not Medicaid compliant, which is going to be the most frequent scenario, we'll bring it out to the secondary market, get those written offers to establish fair market value. We'll present those offers to you and your client. If your client accepts the offer from the secondary market buyer, we'll then get you the necessary paperwork. We'll make it really easy for you to fill out. We'll submit everything to the insurance carrier. And then from there, once we get the green light from the insurance carrier that everything's good to go, then we can expedite those funds to your clients so they can do allowable spend outs. Again, why working with us? We have perfected this process, in my opinion, given how frequently we do it and our understanding of the crisis planning landscape. So it's something that we do very frequently so we can really be an asset, especially if we're in a time crunch. So that's going to be when it's going to be very valuable to lean on this process. So just jumping into some case examples, and what I want to do here is really illustrate how the discount rate works, kind of like what the offers look like, what that whole process that we just described is going to look like for you and your client, and also how we analyze the annuities and what's left on the contract. So the first example here, we have a 74-year-old client. She had purchased an annuity previously that's now preventing her Medicaid eligibility. When we look at the original annuity terms, we realize it's an annuity issued by Allianz. It's a 120-month annuity, so a 10-year term, guaranteed term. She put an initial premium of $114,595, and that's going to give her a payment for the 120 months of $1,043.90. The payments in this situation began on May 26, 2016. So what are we looking at when we are evaluating the contract, or what are those secondary market funding companies looking at? Well, again, the payments that have been made to date, there's been 62 payments or a total of $64,721.80. That's already been given to the client. What the secondary market companies are looking for, what's remaining of the guaranteed payments of that 120 months. So the next payment that was bid on in this situation was the 7/26/2001 payment. And then the last payment was 5/26/2026. So there's 58 remaining monthly payments. So there's a total residual balance of $60,546.20. Here we went out and we obtained four offers, and the offers all varied to some degree, pretty significantly. So if you look at the highest offer versus the lowest offer, there's a pretty big difference in the discount rate, nearly 10%. So that's another reason why we want to go out to multiple companies, because some of these companies, you know, can offer better amounts or will offer better amounts, and there's not really a ton of transparency in this market, so we want to go out and get multiple independent offers. But in this situation, the client ended up going with the highest offer of $46,912, which is a discount rate or a guaranteed rate for that secondary market funding company of 11.43% annually. So the client then received the offer on July 18th, and the funds were received by July 29th. So pretty quick turnaround allowed the client in this situation to complete the spend down process in that same month. And in this case, the client used that $46,912 and they went forward with a gifting MCA plan. So and because of the timing element, we actually sent directly to the Medicaid plan annuity carrier the funds that the client received to expedite the purchase of the new annuity. The remaining funds, the difference between the gift and the MCA amount, were then wired to the client the same day, and the client was able to complete the gift and obtain the annuity before the month's end. So pretty good results. Again, what was remaining, there was about $60,000 remaining over about a five-year term. We were able to get the client $46,912. Again, that represents the current value of that contract. And the better result here is the client was able to not have to wait a month or two to make application for Medicaid. So she was able to get that penalty period rolling sooner than she would have otherwise had she worked with a third party. A second example here, we have an 84-year-old client who had an annuity that prevented his Medicaid eligibility. Looking at the original terms of the contract, it was a Voya Financial Lifetime Annuity. Had a 120-month guaranteed period. So this means that there's a 10-year period certain, and then it had a rider that would pay this individual beyond the 10-year period if he was still living. The initial premium of $241,322.56 is going to kick off a monthly payment of $2,096.83, and the payments began on June 1st, 2019. So again, looking at kind of the contract payments that have been made, we're really focused on the payments that are remaining, particularly remaining in this instance of what's the guaranteed period. We're not going to concern ourselves with the life period because this gentleman's, you know, of an advanced age. So these funding companies are only looking at what's left to be paid out under that guaranteed period. So the next payment in this instance was 4/1/2023. There's going to be 74 more payments for the last payment of 5/1/2029. So the estimated remaining premium was based on the guaranteed period was $155,165.42. So in this case, because there was lesser payments or a couple more payments to be made, but there were higher value, the offers came in a little bit lower on the discount rate, with the highest offer being 116 and the lowest offer being 108,275. So you can see the spread here is a little tighter. And I think that's really due to the payment amount of the contract. So here the client selected the highest offer of $116,000, and the offer was made March 10th, and the funds were received by March 30th. So again, a pretty quick turnaround time that accommodated the spend down process. This client then proceeded again with the gift MCA plan. And because of the timing, we were forced to send the funds directly to the MCA carrier to allow that gift and annuity purchase to be made complete by the end of the month. So I know we covered a lot of material in 45 minutes. So I definitely want to point you in the direction of a resource that can give a little bit more insight into this process. It's our CROSS report, which is new for 2023, and we do update this material pretty frequently. I believe July we did a big update of the figures, the information in here. So definitely download a copy at medicaidannuity.com/CROSS report. And with that, did we have any questions that came through, Elisa?
We did have a few questions come in here. So the first question, what if my client has an annuity with a lifetime payout and it can't be sold on the secondary market? What can they do?
Yeah, if your client has a lifetime contract, it's in that life payout mode, it's beyond the guarantee period, or in some cases there wasn't a guarantee period to begin with, it just was a lifetime payment stream. What we recommend doing in that instance is obtaining what we refer to as refusal letters. These are letters from those secondary market funding companies that basically state that the contract has no value or zero value. And the goal with the refusal letters is we'll typically go and get two or three of them, is to show the Medicaid office that this contract doesn't have any value as an asset and should only be considered as an income source. Because these contracts usually, again, the client's of advanced age, it has no value, because if the client were to pass away tomorrow, there's no way that the secondary market company could put a valuation on it, because that death could occur at any given time. So again, we're going to go after refusal letters in that instance and send those on to the Medicaid office with the goal of treating the annuity as only income.
Okay, another great question we had come in. Are there any other types of contracts that can be valued on the secondary market?
Yeah, we commonly will see contracts from attorneys that are like a promissory note, intrafamily promissory note. A lot of times we'll see that connected with the sale of property. So that's a contract that we see pretty frequently. We're always in that instance going to look for some property to secure the note. And unsecured notes are really going to have very limited value in most cases, so we're going to always look for some asset that's securing that payment stream. The process is a little bit different. We have to actually go out and do an analysis of the underlying property to see what the value, and then we determine, you know, what we're able to pay on that contract. Also, lottery streams, we've been seeing, you know, those pretty frequently. Structured settlements are another type of contract that crosses our desk, so we can help in all of those circumstances as well. Again, the process is just different for those two that I listed. You're going to have to get a court order to actually transition the asset to a third party. But again, those are the primary three types of contracts: promissory notes secured with real estate, lottery payments, and then settlements from lawsuits or the like.
Okay, another question. If I can't sell my client's IRA annuity that's already been annuitized, what options does my client have?
Yeah, that's another instance where we would probably look to obtain those three refusal letters with the goal of just trying to get the Medicaid office to view the contract not as an asset, but as just an income stream. So then they should only be treating the income to the client and not treat the annuity as an asset. So that's the goal there. There might be some, depending on your state, some ability to, you know, make changes and redirect some payments to the healthy spouse potentially. But that's, again, going to be very state specific. So that'd be something you have to look at if it's an option in your particular state. But as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the insurance companies have restrictions internally that are due to some IRS rules that don't allow them to change ownership of an IRA contract or redirect the payments. But again, there might be some wiggle room depending on what the contract actually says and the insurance company that you're dealing with. But we would usually point the client to obtain those refusal letters and start there as a path of least resistance.
Perfect. All right, the last question we'll get to today. Has the current interest rate environment had an impact on the discount rate of these valuations at all?
Yeah, we have seen a little bit tick upward, given that, you know, somebody can invest, put money into a money market account right now and make about 5 or 5.5%. So a lot of these secondary market companies, they want a little bit higher rate of return on these contracts, even though they are guaranteed. We have seen them trickle up a little bit. I would have to analyze really the full impact, but I would say we have seen those discount rates go up a little bit in line with the money market rates or the Fed rate. So nothing really jumps out at me at the moment, but it does follow that trend line.
Perfect. Well, that is all the time we have for questions today. If we didn't get to your question, we will follow up with you later this week. A recording of this webinar will be available shortly through your Attorney Access account. If you're not yet a member of Attorney Access, head on over to medicaidannuity.com/join to get started. Thank you, Tom, for your great presentation today. And thank you to everyone for joining us and for completing that post-webinar survey. Have a great afternoon.